Good day, this is Greg, and I'll be reading the Vermilion County News for Tuesday, September 22nd, 2020. And we'll start with the front page of the commercial news. Our first story today is entitled, Schools Receive Technology Funding, and this is by Jennifer Bailey. Springfield. Local schools are receiving about $838,000 for reimbursement for or additional electronic devices and internet connectivity efforts. Governor J.B. Pritzker and the Illinois State Board of Education announced Monday that 471 local education agencies will receive $80,092,677 to help close the digital divide among Illinois students. Funding for the Digital Equity Formula Grant comes from Federal Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security, or CARES Act. The CARES Act directs federal funding to governors and state education agencies to respond to the COVID-19 pandemic. Grantees include SAFE, the SCH Vermilion Regional Office of Education. They received $31,303. Bismarck Henning Community Unit School District, $74,670. Westville Community Unit School District 2, $100,904. Georgetown Ridge Farm CUD number 4, $81,887. Rossville Alvin Community Unit School District 7, $50,546. Hupston Area Community Unit School District 11, $93,444. Oakwood Community Unit School District 76, $83,123. And Danville CCSD 118, $322,268. With this commitment of $80 million in funding to closing the digital divide, we are building on the same goals we've pushed since the beginning of my administration, creating a pipeline of high-quality learning from cradle to career, said Governor J.B. Pritzker in a press release. Throughout this crisis, I have been so impressed to see all the creative ways superintendents and teachers adapted to the pandemic. A spirit of ingenuity that stretched up into our higher education institutions, too. This pandemic has heightened every inequality and injustice in our nation, and our educators are on the front lines of seeing our young people through this moment. Closing the digital divide has been a priority for the agency since March, when the pandemic forced schools statewide to suddenly shift to remote learning, said State Superintendent of Education, Dr. Carmen I. Ayala. We saw in the spring that many schools did not have the technology or internet access necessary to connect students and teachers in real time and to facilitate meaningful remote instruction. We have learned and prepared a lot since the spring, and we are excited to provide our highest need schools the Digital Equity Formula Grant to strengthen their digital infrastructure this fall and for years to come. More than 1.2 million students have started the 2020-2021 school year with remote learning in place, and approximately 528,000 are learning in a blended or hybrid environment, comprising nearly 92% of all students in Illinois. The Digital Equity Formula Grants are helping ensure students have the technology they need to access robust and equitable learning opportunities this fall. The Digital Equity Formula Grant allocates funding to the highest need LEAs in the state. Those districts, state-authorized charter schools, university lab schools, and alternative and safe school programs administered by the regional offices of education with an evidence-based funding final percent of adequacy of 70% or lower in fiscal year 2020 or fiscal year 2021. Many school districts have already purchased devices, and expanded connectivity since the pandemic began. LEAs may use the grant to purchase additional devices and connectivity or to cover purchases made since March 13, 2020. LEAs will receive reimbursement after submitting an approvable application and at least quarterly expenditure reports. Our other front page story today is entitled Teenager Helps Preserve Cemetery. And this is by Carol Hicks. Hupston. Rhys Thompson, the grandson of George and Connie Colt of Hupston, was one of two winners of the Indiana Landmarks 2020 Sandy Servais Memorial Awards for preserving the 1836 Thornton Colored Cemetery near Thornton, Indiana. Thompson, a high school sophomore at the time, was looking for an Eagle Scout project in 2016 when he learned about the little cemetery and its significant heritage from a local newspaper. Meeting with cemetery trustees, the local newspaper editor, library historian, state officials, county attorney, and scout leaders, he was instrumental in forming the Colored Cemetery Committee. Gathering volunteers, collecting donations, securing permits, and a corporate sponsor, and writing grants for the project, Thompson was able to restore the little cemetery's four stones, erect a new marker telling of the history, and placing a decorative fence around the gravestones. He helped secure the $16,000 Indiana Historical Society Heritage Support Grant to make the restoration possible to preserve the cemetery's history. Thompson went even further, locating and inviting the descendants of the four people buried in the little cemetery as guests of honor for the dedication of the cemetery in August of 2019. In 1836, according to the history, Thornton's black residents were not allowed to be buried within the city limits. Members of the Quaker community purchased the cemetery's grounds to provide a resting place for them. The Thornton Colored Cemetery, located in Boone County, is the only known African-American cemetery and one of the only tangible connections to the community's black heritage. Rhys Thompson was honored September 12th at the Indiana Landmarks 2020 annual meeting. Our next story is entitled, Three Injured in Separate Weekend Shootings. And this is a staff report from Danville. A pair of shooting incidents has resulted in at least one arrest so far. Toy M. Lewis, 32, of Danville, was arrested and is being held while awaiting arraignment in Vermilion County Court on a charge of aggravated battery with a firearm, according to a press release issued Monday by Commander Josh Webb. At 2:10 a.m. on Saturday, Danville police responded to the 1100 block of Fowler Avenue in reference to a report of shots fired. Upon arrival, officers located a 29-year-old Danville man with a gunshot wound to his lower torso. The victim was transported to an area hospital for treatment of his wound, which was determined to be non-life-threatening. Danville police began an investigation into the incident, and during that investigation, a suspect was identified as Lewis. Around 3:22 a.m., police located Lewis in the 1600 block of Edgewood Drive, and she was taken into custody. Lewis was transported to the Danville Public Safety Building. No other injuries were reported during this incident. In a second incident, police responded at 1:44 a.m. Sunday to the OSF emergency room in reference to two victims with gunshot wounds. Officers met with the victims, who were identified as a 23-year-old Danville man with gunshot wounds to his arm and back, and a 21-year-old Danville woman with a gunshot wound to her leg. The victims both stated they were in the parking lot of the Untouchables Motorcycle Club in the 100 block of Commercial when someone started shooting from an unknown direction. Both victims left the scene and got a ride to the hospital, where the incident was then reported to police. Neither of the victims' injuries are considered life-threatening, and no other injuries were reported during this incident. No suspect information is available. The investigation into these incidents continues, and no other information is being released at this time. Anyone who has information regarding these incidents is asked to call Danville Police at 217-431-2250 or Vermilion County Crime Stoppers at 217-446-TIPS. Next, we have another staff report. This one is entitled, County Clerk Announces New Accessible Vote by Mail. The Vermilion County Clerk's Office announces Accessible Vote by Mail, or AVBM. It is a new feature now available for the 2020 general election and is set to go live on September 24th. AVBM is designed to provide blind, low vision, or voters with other disabilities the same opportunity to vote privately and independently as traditional VBM voters. It enables voters to receive their ballot electronically, mark their ballot privately and independently using their own assistive technology, print their marked ballot, and deliver it to the office via United States Postal Service or hand delivery. Voters interested in participating can contact Chief Deputy County Clerk Lindsay Light at cclections@vercounty.org or at 217-554-1911. Illinois law provides vote by mail for all registered voters without the need to specify a reason for doing so. Those who wish to vote by mail may request an application from the county clerk's office as soon as possible. A paperless online application for an early ballot is also available on the website at www.vercounty.org. The last day in which a ballot may be mailed to a voter is Thursday, October 29th, although they recommend requesting a ballot as soon as possible to avoid any possible delay in delivery due to increased volume this election. Voters who are permanently disabled may request to be put on the office's permanent vote-by-mail list. This will entitle the voter to automatically receive a vote-by-mail ballot application for every election. If the voter decides not to vote in the election, they can just disregard the application. If they want to vote, they just sign and return the application, and a ballot will be mailed to them for that election. Illinois law also provides in-person early voting. Early voting is available at the County Voting Center beginning Thursday through Monday, November 2nd, and also on Saturday mornings from 9 a.m. until noon. Voting aids, including special voting equipment designed to meet the needs of physically challenged voters, is available in the County Voting Center and in every polling place on Election Day. If a voter doesn't prefer to utilize the equipment, election judges are trained on the proper way to provide assistance to voters in need. Curbside voting also is offered for voters who cannot get into the building, but they request you call and make an appointment before you come so they can ensure proper staffing to provide the best service possible. For additional information on early voting, voting by mail, or the voting aids used in the voting center and in the polling place, call the office at 217-554-1900 or email cceelections@vercounty.org. And now we'll turn to the obituaries for Tuesday, September 22nd. And our first today is for Deborah K. Pruitt. Deborah, or Debbie, K. Pruitt, 69, of Lafayette, Indiana, died unexpectedly on Saturday afternoon, September 19th, 2020, at IU Arnett Hospital. A service will be held on Saturday, September 26th, at First Christian Church, 329 North 6th Street, in Lafayette, at 1 p.m. with Reverend Andrew Guthrie officiating. Visitation will be held prior to the service from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. at First Christian Church. Burial will follow in Meadowview Cemetery in Lafayette. You can watch the live stream of Debbie's funeral at fcclaf.org on the homepage. Due to COVID, please practice social distancing and wear your mask. In lieu of flowers, memorial gifts may be made to First Christian Church, 329 North 6th Street, Lafayette, in loving memory of Debbie. Walter Kent Galansky. Kent Galansky passed away early on September 13, 2020, in Terre Haute, Indiana. He will be cremated and a memorial service will be held on Saturday, September 26th, in Paxton, Illinois. Stephen John McKenna. Stephen John McKenna of Whitehall, Montana, was born on July 2, 1966 in Berwyn and reunited with Christ on September 12, 2020. Private family visitation is set for Friday, September 25, 2020, at Washburn McCravey Funeral Chapels in Bloomington, Minnesota. A private family funeral mass will be held on September 25, 2020, at St. Edward Catholic Church. The family will plan a celebration of life at a later date for all those who knew and loved Stephen so that they can attend safely. In lieu of flowers, please make donations to the American Heart Association. There is a tribute page in Stephen's honor on their website, or send to Therese McKenna Wensman at 14243 Shorecrest Drive, Northwest, Prior Lake, 55372, to make on his behalf. Corabel Todd. Corabel Todd, 94, of Danville, passed away on Thursday, September 17, 2020. Corabel has been laid to rest at Johnson Cemetery in Danville. Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville has been entrusted in making the arrangements. Memorial donations may be made in Corabel's name to the John Hagee Ministries. Please join Corabel's family in sharing photos and memories on her tribute wall at Sunset Funeral Home site. Donald Joe Bennett Sr. Donald Joe Bennett Sr., 96, passed away on Saturday, September 19, 2020, at VA Eliana Healthcare in Danville, surrounded by his children and grandchildren. A celebration of life service will be held at 12 p.m. on Thursday, September 24th, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville, Illinois, at 3940 North Vermilion Street. Patty Wise will officiate. Visitation will be held prior from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. at the funeral home. Graveside committal with military honors will take place at Sunset Memorial Park. Memorial donations may be made in Donald's name to Union Corner Methodist Church. Daryl W. Myers. Daryl W. Myers was called home September 19th at 3:59 p.m., surrounded by his family. Daryl will be laid to rest at the VA National Cemetery in Danville. Davis Busby Catlin American Legion will perform full military honors. Visitation will be Wednesday, September 23rd, from 4 p.m. to 7 p.m., at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Oakwood, Illinois. Due to the pandemic, Daryl's funeral services will be private with Pastor Kevin Cox presiding. Donations in Daryl's memory can be made to Davis Busby Catlin American Legion Post 776 at P.O. Box 583, Catlin, Illinois 61817. Eleanor Bryson. Eleanor Bryson, 65, of Danville, died at 12:13 p.m. Friday, September 18, 2020, at home. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Leek & Sons Funeral Home at 304 East William Street in Danville. And that's the end of the obituaries for Tuesday. We're going to return to some other news stories from the commercial news. Here's a short staff report entitled "Woman Killed by Train in Hopston." Carol Hicks contributed to this report. Danville, the Vermilion County Coroner, Jane McFadden, has released the name of the woman who was involved in a pedestrian train accident at the railroad crossing on East Lincoln Street in Hopston Monday morning. The victim was identified as Jody L. Psycho, 49, of Hopston. The accident occurred at 5:44 a.m. Monday at the Lincoln Street crossing. All streets but Thompson Avenue were closed as the Hopston Police and Fire Department searched for evidence along the scene. The train left the scene at 8 a.m. The Hopston Police Department and the Vermilion County Coroner's Office continue to investigate. And then we have Danville City Hall remains closed. And this is another staff report. Danville. The Robert E. Jones Municipal Building in Danville remains closed due to city staff members testing positive for COVID-19. Mayor Ricky Williams Jr. announced another member of the City Hall team tested positive for COVID-19. They also have other team members who are awaiting test results, as well as those who now must be tested and/or quarantined due to both known and potential exposure. This means City Hall at 17 West Main Street will remain closed at least through the end of business on Friday, September 25th. All non-impacted staff will continue working at home during this time. Williams said they will do their best to answer and return calls. However, due to limited staffing and the city's phone system being forwarded to cell phones, it may be difficult to obtain a live person. Therefore, if you do not speak with someone, leave a message, and they will get back to you as soon as possible during regular business hours from 8 a.m. to noon and 1 p.m. to 4:30 p.m. Monday through Friday. As a reminder, Williams asks the public to follow recommended Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and Illinois Department of Public Health guidelines regarding the coronavirus to ensure that everyone stays as healthy as possible. And in the opinions column, today we have a letter to the editor from Dennis Smith, president of the Vermilion County Farm Bureau, and it's entitled, "Progressive Tax Won't Solve Illinois' Financial Problems." On the ballot this fall, you will be asked whether you support changing Illinois' income tax structure. Vote no on this question. The amendment would end the state's flat tax income tax, but it will not solve our state's fiscal problems. If enacted, the constitutional amendment would no longer require Illinois to have a flat tax, currently set at 4.95% for all Illinoisans, and instead it would allow the state to enact a progressive tax. These rates would initially vary between 4.75% and 7.99% based on a household's income level. Revenue from this proposed progressive tax structure is unlikely to meet the state's projected deficits and debt obligations that are coming in the next few years. And until our state's politicians get their fiscal house in order, costs will continue to grow, and all our taxes will continue to increase. The progressive tax would shift the taxing burden on the highest earners in the state, but raising taxes on the highest earners will not fix our state's financial problems, and, in the long run, may only lead to higher taxes for all of us. It is a farce to think the top 3% of Illinoisans will cover this additional multi-billion dollar increase in costs. If asked to do so, these top earners will simply shift assets out of the state or will leave Illinois altogether. And when our state reaches that point, Who else is there to be taxed? The other 97% of us. We will be left to cover the holding of the bill and the lawmakers forced to pick up the tab, like we always do. Additionally, we know most of the revenue from the progressive tax will be spent in two places: our state's exorbitantly high pension costs and debt obligations, and not spent, as proponents claim, on our public schools, social services, and public safety. Lawmakers have been digging themselves into pension and debt holes for decades, and now they expect us, the taxpayers, to pull them out. But we taxpayers did not create these problems. Lawmakers' poor policy decisions did. Taxes should not be raised on the folks that had nothing to do with the policy decisions that got us here. Adding to the already dismal financial situation is our state's response to the COVID-19 pandemic. The sudden months-long halt of our state's economy means less tax revenue for the state, as businesses are not open, workers are laid off, and consumers stay home. Ironically, proponents will claim these lower tax revenues will be used as further justification to support the progressive tax. Don't be fooled. This unexpected pandemic should not be used to advocate for a change in our Constitution. Now is not the time to enact a progressive tax in Illinois. The progressive tax will not solve our state's financial troubles and will, in the long run, lead to higher taxes for all of us. Let's tell our state lawmakers to get the state's finances in order before they come after ours by voting no on the constitutional amendment in November. And from Dear Annie, we have Cutting the Apron Strings. Dear Annie, my mother-in-law is a widow and lives next door to my husband and me. I've never felt like we had privacy, as she would walk over whenever she felt like it and visit without calling first. Even when we were newly married, she would just walk over to our house without reaching out beforehand. My parents always told me never to live next door to your in-laws. It would only cause trouble in my marriage, and I would not have privacy. However, when I married my hubby, he was already living next door to his parents, both in very nice homes. Now don't get me wrong, she is a very nice person, yet my husband and I would someday like to move and build a new home in our area. The problem is my husband, without even asking my opinion, has said that when we build our house, he will put on an in-law apartment for her. He acts as if it is just a matter of fact and this will happen. He can be stubborn and set in his ways. We have not discussed this subject with my mother-in-law. This has just been between my hubby and me. My mother-in-law has never discussed the issue of her moving as she ages, and she seems quite happy and content where she is now. Though I believe that would drastically change if my husband and I move. My mother-in-law is a good and caring person, but I finally want to cut the apron strings. I want my privacy back for our senior years and for my husband and his mother to ask my opinion on things. Am I being selfish? What should I do? Signed, Ask for My Opinion. Dear Ask for My Opinion, healthy marriages have two key ingredients, communication and compromise. Clearly, your mother-in-law is very important to your husband. Be honest with him and say that you love his mother, but that she should not just stop by unannounced. You can express to him that there is something really nice about a son who respects his mother and wants to take care of her, especially since she is widowed. But then tell him there is also something nice about a husband who listens to his wife's wishes and respects the privacy and intimacy of their marriage, which is between just the two, not the three of you. If your husband is set on having your mother-in-law live next door, be clear about your boundaries. And finally, from the community briefs, announcement, the county committee meeting has been canceled for the Vermilion County Judicial and Rules Committee. Scheduled for today, it has been canceled and no date for rescheduling has been announced. Contact the Vermilion County Board Office at 554-6000 with any questions or comments. And that takes us to the end of our time for today, Tuesday, September 22nd, 2020. My name is Greg, and it's been a pleasure to read for you. I hope you have a great day and stay safe. Take care.